I'm Mary Cummings Jordan. You are listening to the Radio Times Regional Roundup on WHYY. It's a song from the Sacred Harp Songbook, apparently called Exhortation, and I'm told that the music clip we just heard doesn't do justice to actually participating in and hearing Sacred Harp singing live. Sacred Harp singing, also known as shape note singing, has been in existence in this country for centuries. The concept is beautifully simple. It's communal. The musical structure is relatively uncomplicated. Anyone can participate, and many who do say it can be transformational. We're joined now by Thomas Ward, himself a shape note singer and organizer of the forthcoming Keystone Sacred Harp Convention. Welcome to Radio Times.
Thank you for having me.
I must be living in a bubble because when our producer John Ahrens pitched this as a show idea, I'd never heard of it. But it is among the oldest forms of music in this country, and it is enjoying quite a revival.
It definitely is. And it's funny that you should describe your experience that way, because that was kind of my experience of it. It was sort of on my radar for a long time. I kind of vaguely knew about it, but I had no idea that it was this living tradition. And I actually had a CD with some shape note music on it, and I thought, oh, this is kind of cool. I wonder if people still sing this. And I Googled it, and lo and behold, on my block, there was a regular singing that week. And so I just went along and kind of never turned back.
So you walked in the door, mm-hmm. and you saw people singing, and you were probably welcomed in. My understanding mm-hmm. is that this is just, it's an open arms type of gathering.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Whether you can really sing well or not, right?
Yeah. In fact, some would say that singing well is not necessarily a good thing in the traditional sense. I think a lot of the way that we sing goes against a lot of what people who are classically trained might be told to do. It's not about making a pretty sound. It's about being involved and participating. So yes, we say that no experience is necessary. There are no performances, no rehearsals, and no judgment, as one of our singers said to me yesterday, actually, at a singing.
So. And yet, when I've heard clips, it does sound good.
Oh, well, that's good. Nice to say. Nice to hear. Yeah.
Let's talk about how this works. Shape notes.
Yes.
Help us to visualize mm-hmm. what this is if we are looking at the songbook.
Right. So shape note, the phrase shape note refers to, in fact, a printing convention. And it's actually, there's some debate about when this convention was invented, but one account puts it in Philadelphia around 1800. And it's a style of printing music in four-part harmony that is aimed to help people who don't have training in reading music.
Okay.
And so if you can picture a score of music with the sort of round, most traditional music has round note heads.
But with a little flag on top.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But with shape note music, the note heads are different shapes. They're actually four different shapes.
Triangle.
Yes, a triangle, a square, a circle, and a diamond. And it's a little bit, it's slightly complicated to explain, but basically those shapes refer to steps on the scale. So it's meant to sort of help people be able to pick up music and sight read it very quickly without having to have intense training. And that is actually, it's interesting, people who have absolutely no background in reading music often pick it up more easily, whereas I actually came to it having had experience in singing choir and playing the piano, and I sort of had to learn how to incorporate this new piece of information, which is the shapes, you know, into my reading of the music.
How does the actual group singing work? There's no conductor.
That's right.
There's no audience. Mm-hmm. There are no instruments. Right. So what are the mechanics there?
Yeah, or you could put it the other way, that we are all of those
things. You
are
everything.
Right? Yeah, okay. So we sit in a square. We face each other. You've got the basses on one side, the sopranos, who we actually call trebles, on facing them, and then on the other two sides of the square, the tenors and the altos. And we face each other, and usually what happens is we take turns. People just pick a song and say, I'd like to hear, you know, number 33 on the bottom of the page, and everyone opens the book, and we sing that song, and if we get it right, we get it right.
There is a leader.
There is a leader, yes.
And you kind of rotate that out.
Exactly.
Right?
And that person stands in the middle of the square. And usually the way it works is he or she waves their arm and kind of to keep time in a sort of simple way. And actually, people in the square will follow along also waving their arms to keep time. But people sometimes who come not having been before are sort of wondering what's going on. Why is everyone waving their arms around?
It's called beating time, I read.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. And it's just to keep everyone kind of together. We sing for ourselves, and you know, sometimes people ask me, oh, when do you perform? And we don't perform. We just get together and sing together.
What is the Sacred Harp Songbook? Because this is at the heart of much of this.
That's right. So the Sacred Harp Songbook was first published in, I think, around 1844, and has been updated continually since then. It's, I think, so the most recent edition, which is the one that we sing out of, is from 1991. But it really is just the most popular shape note book. There are others. There's one called the Shenandoah Harmony, which is a newer one that was actually put together by some people who also sing in Philadelphia. And then, you know, there are also other shape traditions. So we ours is a four shape tradition, and there's also a seven shape tradition, which is it's the same principle. It's just mm-hmm. the shapes correspond to the scale steps in a slightly different way.
I'd like to get to a clip in just a moment,
sure.
But first, you know, there are Christian roots definitely to the Sacred Harp music, but all are welcome.
That's right. Yeah.
Just to clarify.
That's right. And so another thing, if you were to show up at a singing, the music is largely Christian, but people from all sorts of backgrounds come. A lot of people who are entirely secular. It's not about proselytizing or faith in that way. So I think that's an important thing to
clarify.
We'll
talk about the experience in just a mm-hmm. moment. But because Sacred Harp singing is sung by so many singers sitting in the round, it is known as difficult to record properly. One of the best attempts at a professional Sacred Harp recording was made for the 2003 Civil War movie Cold Mountain. Here is that recording of the song Idumea, credited simply to the Sacred Harp singers. Sensation of being inside something like this, Thomas Ward. when you are in a group singing this music, how can you describe it?
I can try. And I mean, I should say it's very different for different people. Some people connect very much to the words. For some people, the words are not that important. It's the music. I think it may be fair to say that the community is a huge part of it. The feeling that you're with a group of people, whether it's a very small group. I mean, that was quite a large group that was singing, and often the groups are very large, especially at that big sort of convention type situations. But it's, yeah, I think a feeling of belonging to a group and creating something together as a group that isn't for sale. It isn't for other people. It isn't not for other people. It's just we're doing it together, and it's not. We're not doing it as a performance. We're just kind of doing it for each other.
It sounds as if it can be transporting. That's what I was looking for.
Yeah, yeah. It absolutely can. I mean, there sometimes is a sense that you sort of you blend into the crowd, and you really. I've been in situations where we'll all kind of start singing a song, and as a group, we kind of make a decision to sing it in one way or another, and it's not necessarily the leader who's making that decision. We're all.
You just kind of go with the flow as a group. You're making a decision. You sense it from your fellow singers.
Yes, or the collective mind kind of takes over, and I think that's it's not about being. A performer in that way, and it can be very transporting, and sometimes it can take you by surprise. You'll be singing a song that you've sung 100 times, and the words will suddenly say something new to you that you had never experienced before. So
let's talk about some of the common themes of the lyrics. Mortality,
absolutely,
is a big one.
Yes.
I mean, some of these lyrics were written like a few centuries ago, and it was much closer to people back then than perhaps it is in today's culture.
Absolutely. That clip that you just played, I mean, the lyrics are, "And am I born to die and lay this body down? And must my trembling spirit fly into a world unknown?" Which I think for a lot of, people that very explicit sort of discussion of death, which occurs in the lyrics, can be troubling and surprising and alarming. But I think that is also one of the things that a lot of people who sing kind of connect to. I should say it's not all, dark and scary, sort of things like that. But that is an element of the lyrics.
So there was a revival of this music genre. I think it was in New England in the late 60s, which was characterized then by a cultural exchange with the South, which is where these – are they all called singings? That's generally when you get together, it's called a singing?
A singing, yes.
Okay. And I've read that Southern singings are considered to be a bucket list item for many people. Is that right?
Well, yeah. I mean, for a lot of people, lots of people have very different relationships to this music. And I came to it about 9 or 10 years ago. And so I wasn't, part of that. I mean, people who were doing that revival in the 60s, that was before I was born. And so they would be able to speak more to what that was like. I think there among some singers, there is a sense that the South is kind of where it is the authentic. But I think that a lot of people have also kind of begun to try to nuance that idea, because after all, a lot of the music actually comes from New England in the first place. And I mean, the thing about this also that should be said is it brings together a lot of different strands and traditions. And so there's the sort of Southern strand, there's a New England strand, there's older music, there's more modern music. Music is continuing to be written actually for the tradition. So there are, active composers who are still writing this kind of music that they bring to singings and try them out at singings.
And if you look at a group of people in a singing, you'll find a fascinating bunch of different types of folks from all walks of life. Tell us about that.
That's right. And I mean, that's kind of...
Describe a singing for us.
Sure. I mean, you'll see the kind of tattooed, pierced city folk, and some, we have some plainclothes people, sort of Amish and River Brethren type people who sometimes come to singings, older, younger. So it is a really interesting range. In fact, one thing that strikes a lot of people is just how, there are all these like young people who seem very like kind of punky people. Like, what are they doing singing this apparently very religious music? It just it's so.
Well, what do you think they're doing there?
You know,
people in there say they're 20s and, you know, maybe early 30s?
I think it depends on who you ask, and I wouldn't want to speak for those people.
Sure.
I mean, I think I've heard from some people that it's about connecting. I think a lot of it is in some, for a lot of younger people, it's a kind of anti-commercialist sort of thing as well, because I mean, you can buy recordings of it, but I mean, there's an old joke that you might drive for 5 hours to sing in a Sacred Harp singing, but you wouldn't cross the street to just listen to it or pay to go. You'd never pay to go to a performance, you know? And so it's not
about the experience of being inside.
Exactly. It's not about producing a product in that sense. And I think that appeals to a lot of people who are sort of tired of the kind of commercialization of music.
Okay. We've only got about 30 seconds left. There is a convention ahead.
That's right. So the Keystone Convention, which is an annual convention, it's on the 24th and 25th of this month, January, and it's at the Rotunda, which is a space at 4014 Walnut Street. Anyone is welcome. It's free. Just show up. It's from 10 to 3:30. People come in and out. If you want to find out more, phillysacredharp.org is a website where you can find out about the singings.
And again, that's the weekend of the 25th at the Rotunda in Philadelphia.
That's right.
Thomas Ward, it was so great to have you with us. What a lot of fun.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Thank you so much. Mm-hmm. Have fun.
Thank you.
Our engineer today has been Diana Martinez. Our producers, Debbie Bilder, John Ahrens, and Kelsey Hansen. I am Mary Cummings Jordan. Great to have you with us for Radio Times. Be sure to join us tomorrow for the next Radio Times show.